Hello and welcome to the Sustainable Life podcast. My name is Em and I'm the host of this podcast and the founder of the Sustainable Life app, an app for sustainable living made easy. The Sustainable Life app, free on both Apple and Android, connects you with sustainable brands and businesses worldwide. And the purpose of this podcast is to interview various experts around the world about topics relating to sustainability. Our podcast's objective is to help keep you informed, encouraged, and inspired. So COVID-19 sucks, and I'm sure you, like me, must be wondering how to keep your immune system strong and to help you hopefully withstand the virus and any mutations of the virus that could emerge in the future. On today's show, we have naturopathic doctor and Western medicine pharmacist. Yes, she's both. She knows East and Western medicine, and her name is Shabitha Deja. So without further ado, let's get started. Today on the show, we have Dr. Shabitha Deja. Did I say that correct? Yes. So welcome on the show. And Dr. Deja is a naturopath and a pharmacist. And I'll just hand it over to you. Like, do you want to share with the listeners a little bit more about you and your backstory?
First of all, thank you for having me. I love talking about naturopathic medicine, something that I'm so passionate about. I am a pharmacist as well, so I like to bridge the gap between the two worlds, the conventional medical world and the naturopathic medical world, because I myself have been a patient and continue to be somebody that deals with health challenges. So I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis at age 19. It progressed very quickly to the point of having emergency surgery to remove my colon. So I lived with an ileostomy bag for a few years. I had it reversed and I now live with something called a J pouch, where essentially my small intestine functions as both large and small intestine. So I am very passionate about gut health for that reason. My gallbladder was removed, and now I deal with something called chronic central nervous system sensitization, which essentially means that my nervous system is on overdrive. My body thinks that it's always in pain. And so I'm always on the lookout for what can help support the nervous system and sort of get our community, our world out of sympathetic dominance, where we're constantly under fight or flight. And we want to move into rest and digest more so, and that's the parasympathetic nervous system, and that's all about healing and restoration. That's a little bit about me and my background and kind of why I'm so passionate about naturopathic medicine and wellness in general. And I'll just say that I practice at St. Clair Wellness Center, so I'm a co-owner there in downtown Vancouver, BC. I am seeing patients over telehealth and phone consults, and I do have to say that reaching out to patients during this time has been so beneficial for both of us, both me and my patients, because isolation can be a big thing that we're facing right now. So just continue to reach out to each other and support each other during this time. And just one other caveat that my college, that I respect my college, the regulatory body, that there is nothing that can prevent or treat COVID-19 right now. So as a naturopath, I have to say that there is no proven techniques. There is no proven modalities that actually treats COVID-19. So everything that I'm going to talk about today, please remember that caveat.
That's beautiful. And I guess, like, I also want to add in for the listeners too, that, like, of course you shared your personal story and all that you've been through and how that's led you to go into naturopathic medicine and becoming a pharmacist as well. But like, I experienced in the last, I want to say 8 years or so, I suffer from sinusitis. So, and I was really shocked because one day I just kind of woke up and my sense of smell was gone. And I was like, what the heck is going on? I can't smell anymore. So I went to the doctor and I was like, I can't smell. I have to go see a specialist. This is serious. And they were like, no, it's just allergies. And I kind of went back to the doctor and I said, you know, this is serious. And they're like, well, it's just allergies. Use nose spray. So I tried that and it didn't work. And, you know, I don't like using excessive medicine. Like, I just knew something was happening. So I kept going back, and this was like the story for 5 years until one day I went to my doctor's office and I went, look, guy, you can call the cops if you want to, but I'm going to sit in this chair until you make an appointment for me to see a specialist.
Yes.
That's just how it's going to be, because I've been coming here way too much and I'm tired of it. Like, just do it. And I did it nicely, but I wasn't going to get up off that chair. I just wasn't. So they made an appointment and I went to see a sinusitis specialist or whatever. And I ended up going for a surgery right away. They did like a CT scan. It was getting close to the brain. And they cleaned me out and my sense of smell is back. But this is kind of what made me go down this path. I've always been very like a bit of an activist and very like socially conscious and such. And I've never really loved fast fashion in any way, shape or form. So from like when I was a teenager, I was a child rights activist. But when I started to realize that it's not just about like the human rights aspect and the animal rights aspect to products that we consume, it's also our human health aspect.
Yeah,
that's when the game kind of changed a little bit for me. And learning about like cleaning products that we use in the home and so many other things and how that affects our health. So I guess my reason for sharing that story and also bringing up that point is like, how do you feel? Has any of that impacted your health? Like, do you put blame to the environment in any way, shape or form, or is it genetics for you?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I don't think I'll ever quite know the answer. You know, the whole hygiene hypothesis where kids nowadays aren't exposed to a lot. We're all so sanitized all the time that we're not exposed. We're not exposing our immune system to building it up to the viruses, bacteria, fungi, parasites that not necessarily are, you know, not going to be detrimental, but so that our immune system, because our immune system has a memory, right? So we want to have, we want to build a memory up into our immune system so that it recognizes that the next time it is faced with certain invaders. So I don't know whether that played a role in my childhood, because I got diagnosed at 19. I do think genetics played a bigger role for me because I have a number of first degree relatives that also have autoimmune diseases, not necessarily ulcerative colitis, but in that category, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, Crohn's disease. So I think genetics played a bigger role for me. But yeah, that is a good question. There's always a balance between genetics and environment, right? And we don't know the percentages of each on the causation of a particular disease. I will say too that a type A personality and stress and where we hold our stress, I think is something that I have learned so much about from 19 to, I'm 36 right now. So I have learned a tremendous amount about that because of my own personal health journey and where we carry the stress and how that manifests, stress management, talk therapy, getting it out, because I was a type of a, I was a child that, I'm the eldest, I think birth order matters too. So, you know, where we carry a lot of stress, Indian background, so, you know, high achievers and all of that goes into the pressure. And so I think that also plays a role in autoimmune disease. And I mean, the research might be lacking there, but anecdotally, I have seen that time and time again with my IBD, so inflammatory bowel disease, autoimmune patients, to be honest.
So is what you're saying is type A patients tend to hold more of their stress in their gut? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that is what I'm saying. And that also type A personalities tend to just hold stress inside versus communicating it and realizing that holding it in our body, our cells have a memory, emotions and thoughts actually have a physiological impact on our health. As a naturopath, I am dealing with something called the healing triangle with all of my patients, where there's a mental, emotional, and physical plane to the triangle. And our center of gravity is ideally in the middle of that triangle. And all of us are pulled in one, two, or all three directions. So there's an imbalance then in our body. And so bringing up that mental and emotional picture and talking about that rather than just focusing on what's physically going on. We are all a comprehensive, holistic being, right? So naturopathic medicine so beautifully ties all three aspects together. And I think that type A personalities tend to just focus on what's going on physically with me when not realizing the mental, emotional, like this is mind body medicine, right? At the end of the day. So we need to look at where we're holding our stress and talking through the catastrophizing and the thoughts that tend to have a big impact on our health. But and you can hold stress in your back, you can hold stress in your gut, in your ankles. Like it just depends where you manifest that pain or disease state. But I think stress and how we manage that plays a big role in our disease and our conditions, our health. Yeah.
I love this conversation because we are like we're about to talk about COVID and stuff, but like this is even more fascinating. So like what's a type B personality? Like where did they hold their stress? What happens there? So curious.
Yeah, that I'm not sure because I think that I really have focused, like this is my personal health journey is really what talking about. So yeah, more about type A really. I wouldn't know type B.
Because that's fascinating because I get it. Like if you're very extroverted and you're a type A, I'm a bit of a type A as well. You would hold it in because you're focusing on the external and how do I fix this type of a thing. Yeah. But I think what you're just saying is a type B would probably be if you're more introverted, you're focusing more on the emotional. Is that kind of what the thought idea would be behind that?
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily just that being extroverted means you're not focused on the internal. It's that where are your priorities? Where do you fall on your things to do list? And I think as women, you know, I deal with multiple Facebook groups that deal with this very concept that we're on the lowest priority on our things to do list. And as I'm not a mother yet, hopefully, but as mothers, as women, we tend to take care of everybody but ourselves. And so putting ourselves to the top of our things to do list helps so much, not only for our own personal health, but for those around us. And it's about talking through the thoughts that we have in our head. I often tell my patients that, where is your off ramp? And what I mean by that is when you have thoughts that are circulating in your head, do they just continue to circulate? And we think at a speed of, I think, we think at a 10 to 100,000 thoughts a day. So we're not talking a lot. We're not talking as much as we're thinking, essentially. So we want to have an off ramp. And what that off ramp could be is meditation, is yoga, is counseling, EFT, emotional freedom technique, tapping. So there's lots of tools, there's lots of modalities that can help with that. And I think that, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're extroverted, so you're not focused on the internal. It's that you need to be talking through what your circulating internal thoughts are, because those are the ones that can be, a lot of times they're more negative than positive, and that can be damaging.
Okay. Well, for the type B people out there, sorry. We'll try to do our research, and if we can do it in time, I'll include it in the podcast interview. Yeah. So let's go ahead with COVID then. So a lot of people are sitting at home right now and they're going, there's a disease out there. Do I have a strong enough immune system to fight this? I don't know. Some people think they do and then they get it. And then some people think they don't and they don't get it. So obviously genetics has a big part in all of this too. And there's so many news reports out there with people speculating, so no one really knows for sure. But what can we do just in general to keep our immune system strong? And maybe if you could start off by kind of explaining to us what our immune system is and then what the general components are and how we can keep them strong.
Yeah, absolutely. So your immune system is basically the system in your body that is going to be your line of defense against any invaders. And those invaders can be viruses, bacteria, fungi, parasites, allergies. So basically anything that's an invader, your immune system is that first line of attack. Now, your immune system is divided into two components, your innate immune system and your adaptive immune system. Your innate is the first line of defense. So that can be simply your tears, your saliva, your microbiome. It's your first line of defense. It also includes your macrophages. So your macrophages are cells that actually engulf the bacteria and gobble it up, eat it up, so it's no longer. Okay, so that's the first line of defense. Your adaptive,
cool.
Yeah, it's really cool, actually. The physical, so your adaptive immunity is really that physical barrier.
Wait, so where are my macrophages? Like, are they like on my fingers? Are they on my...
So they're internally. So they're
Okay.
Yeah, so cool. And your organs of immunity are your... So your bone marrow is where all your cells are made. Mm-hmm. And your spleen actually holds your... is a reservoir, basically, for your white blood cells. Your white blood cells, if you notice on... if you've ever gotten your blood work back, and I send a lot of patients for blood work, you'll see CBC plus differential. And CBC means your complete blood count, plus differential means it differentiates all of your white blood cells. So it'll show your neutrophils, your monocytes. So these are two cells that actually target bacterial infections. It'll show your lymphocytes, which target viral infections, so viruses, basophils, eosinophils, so more parasite and allergies. And so it'll show you in numbers, how many of those do you actually have? Okay?
Cool.
Yeah. So that's why your blood work is so important. And I send patients for that, at least once every 2 years. And a lot of patients that come to me don't even have a baseline. They can't even remember the last time they've gone for blood work.
So what you're saying is, like, when we go to the doctor and our doctor gets this blood test, they can see, looking at the form, just like how high my white blood cells are. And I'm someone with like a lot of allergies. Yeah. So they can look at that number, and based on that number, they can see if like my allergies are getting better or worse.
Well, absolutely. Because they will be able to see whether you're eosinophils, for example, which are more prominent in an allergenic response, if they're elevated or not. Like, is your body recruiting more of this particular cell type to fight off an allergy? You can also see your individual immunoglobulin. So those are your IgG, IgE. There's various different types of immunoglobulins to fight various types of infections. So IgE is responsible for your allergies. So if you have asthma, if you have eczema, if you have a peanut allergy, if you have anaphylaxis, your IgE level, will be elevated. And so you can tell that. And So there's a differentiation between that versus IgG, which is more of an immune system response. And that's what I test for often for food sensitivities. So IgG is going to be elevated if you have a particular, food sensitivity to chickpeas or spinach or peas, for example, right? So there's a difference between...
I just found out this year I have a FODMAP allergy, apparently.
Here we go, yeah.
Like, I didn't even know what a FODMAP was. I was like, what are you talking about? I love spinach. I eat peas all the time.
Yeah.
Chickpeas are like, I'm a vegetarian. I need chickpeas.
Yes.
You know, I can't eat those things. I can't have honey. Like, it's crazy.
Okay. It is, so, yeah.
What about viruses then? Like, so is there some way to kind of protect your or make your immune system stronger against viruses? Because I'm sure you have like techniques for the food allergies and then for allergies in general. But like, what do you do for viruses then?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just going to finish with, so there's innate and adaptive immunity, just so that we, bookend that part of the conversation.
Sure.
So the adaptive immunity constitutes your T cells and B cells, which are particular cells that are going to target those viruses and bacteria.
Cool.
Okay. So the T cells actually, once your macrophages from your innate immune response go and gobble up the initial invaders, they will present a little part of that invader to the next line of defense, which is your T and B cells. And they'll say, okay, you guys, now you can individually target. So if this is a virus, this particular T cell will kill that. If this is a bacteria, this particular T cell will kill that. And then the B cells actually have a memory, so that if you're exposed to those particular viruses and bacteria again, the B cells have that memory of what's going on. And so it's easier then to target and engulf and get rid of that virus or bacteria.
Cool. So that's kind of like how many doctors don't necessarily get like flus and colds as often, because when you're around it, you've built up that in your immune system. So you're less likely to get it again. So that's essentially what the B cells do.
Yeah, there's a memory there for sure. Yeah. Cool. And so that's what we're kind of talking about at the beginning too, that hygiene hypothesis, is that there's always a balance between exposure and overexposure. But the more you're exposed to the initial viruses and bacteria, are actually building up a memory, so that the next time you are invaded by that, the body is able to go in and destroy that.
So like people who don't get COVID but are exposed to COVID, is it because there's something in their B cells? I don't know if this is like really kindergartening it for me, but like, is there something in their B cells that like make them immune? Is that what it essentially is, or is that something totally different and I'm oversimplifying for my own brain?
I think that, so with COVID, there's a lot that we don't know.
Right.
And I think that's what the challenge is. We know that it's a SARS type of virus. So COVID-19 is actually just the infection, the actual response that is happening, the actual infection, right? It's part of the SARS COVID branch of viruses, and these are all, they have spike proteins, and so it depends on what, so basically it's like a lock and key, right? The virus has little spike proteins on it, and then where is the lock and key in our body? So is there going to be more in an elder individual and less in a kid? That's what we're seeing right now, is that the elderly are more susceptible because they have more receptors for this particular virus.
As in their immune system is lower than a child would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what can you do? Are you at that stage yet?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's lots that can be done too. So I want to differentiate boosting the immune system, which we're hearing a lot about nowadays, right? You want to boost the immune system. We're actually wanting to support it. Right. And so I know it's just a different word, but it is really important, because nothing will actually cure this virus right now. We don't know enough about it. Nothing. Right. We don't have a vaccine. So what we can do to generally support our immune system is lifestyle. So that would be stress management, hydrotherapy, and this hygiene hypothesis. So help washing hands, the different lifestyle measures, sanitization, to actually break down the viral envelope, right? That's what hand washing does, essentially. It breaks down the viral bilayer. The second thing would be the foods that we're putting into our body. We talked about the food sensitivities. So are you actually contributing to lowered immunity by putting in foods that contribute to increased inflammation in your body? So like you said, you have a food sensitivity to spinach, chickpeas. That would be detrimental to put that into your body right now, because that's adding to the inflammatory response. And we can talk more about the gut immune, gut brain connection. But when you put in foods that actually are inflammatory, your immune system is mounting a response. And so it's taking away its energy from fighting off potential viruses and bacteria that are invading you. So
that's fascinating, because there's a lot of people right now I'm seeing on social media baking bread and making their sourdough starters and Lord knows what else. Mm-hmm. And there have been a few people who I've seen their Instagram accounts who have told me that they think they have a sensitivity to like gluten and various other things. And it's like social norms are essentially saying right now, you're stuck in your house. You have to keep up with social media norms. And people are talking about what they're binge watching, or they're talking about what they're making in their kitchens. So-and-so just made some bread. Maybe I should make some bread.
Yeah.
So essentially what you're saying is like, if you do have a sensitivity and you know you have sensitivity to like dairy or eggs or gluten bread type stuff or whatever, And you see other people who are kind of doing it and you're like, oh, maybe I should do it too. Like, think twice. Maybe you shouldn't be baking that bread, or bake it and have your husband eat it, but not you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you, the big food sensitivities are exactly what you're saying. Dairy, gluten, sugar, yeast, caffeine, and alcohol. And sugar is one that will actually, there's been study upon study that has shown that when participants actually ingest a sugary drink, their immune system, so they're measuring their viral load essentially, their immune system is reduced by up to 50%, 3 to 5 hours after ingesting that sugary beverage.
So you mean like white sugar though, right? Like white sugar aspartame? Yeah, but maple syrup should be fine. Honey, like coconut sugar, those kind of naturally based sugars, should they be better, or are those also a concern?
So they're less processed than white sugar, right? White substances tend to have no fiber associated to it, and they're milled a bunch of times. So there's a lot of processing involved, and our body doesn't recognize that processing. It's similar to gluten, right? That's why sourdough actually is not so bad, because it's fermented and it's in its more natural form. So it's actually more recognized by the body. I will say though that maple syrup, honey, coconut sugar, always use it in moderation, because sugar is sugar. Sugar is recognized in the body as sugar. It will spike your glucose. So you have to take it with a grain of salt.
And it's okay to have sugar too, just like you're saying, in moderation.
In moderation, yeah, of
so
course.
So many other things you could do too, like sweeten with bananas, like ripe bananas.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. So it's all, and to be honest, this is why I love what I do so much, because it's about individualized medicine. What I say to one patient isn't going to be therapeutically beneficial to another patient necessarily. And what I mean by that is that if I'm suggesting sweetening with bananas, for example, to a diabetic, that might not be such a good thing, because bananas are high on the glycemic index, spike your blood sugar. So for a diabetic, it's not so great. But somebody that's not sensitive to bananas, that has a lot of diarrhea, bananas are great binders, that might be beneficial to them. So it just depends on what you yourself are dealing with individually. And you know, for you, you said that you had sinusitis, you deal with allergies. I know that dairy tends to be, associated with mucus, they're mucus producing food. So for you, I would suggest eliminating or having dairy in very limited quantities, because that tends to be mucus producing. So everybody has a particular dietary intervention or dietary prescription that's beneficial for them.
Yeah, that's beautiful. What about immune system differences between men and women? Is there anything?
Yeah, so that was a good question. That's something that you brought up earlier, and it got me to thinking actually, because it's not something that there's not a whole lot of research out there on that, or not a lot of new research. But I will say that the general consensus is that because females tend to have a higher rate of autoimmune disease, it seems that men have a higher innate immune response and females have a higher adaptive immune response. So meaning that men tend to be better, and this is dependent on age, okay? So this is just saying men and women in general. Age, we're not taking that into account right now. But men tend to be better at fighting off the initial virus and bacteria. Their innate response is heightened. So their macrophages are heightened. Maybe they have a better microbiome. But females tend to have a better adaptive immune response. So their T cells or B cells are upregulated. There's a particular T cells called the T regulatory cell. But when that is on overdrive, that tends to get us into autoimmune disease, because then our immune system isn't differentiating self versus non-self. It's actually attacking our own self's tissue. And so that's why I think females tend to have a higher rate of autoimmune disease. So there's a trade-off there. But yeah, that tends to be the general consensus on females versus males. And the other thing too, I think it's because of our hormones. And I know with your Sustainable Life app and all that you talk about there, which is so amazing, There's a lot of endocrine disruptors. So the things that we're putting into our body, the toxins that we're being exposed to, can disrupt our endocrine system, our hormonal system. And that can put females at a bit of a disadvantage when dealing with the immune system. Because remember that your endocrine, immune, and nervous system all go hand in hand.
It's a lot to have to remember, I'm not going to lie. Like, it's really overwhelming. I think, like, probably about halfway through, I was like, oh, I'm screwed. I don't know what to do. Oh, crap. Yeah, you're so right. Because it's not just, you know, what you eat. It's also what you're around. And it's your genetics and how your body's made. And, like, all the patterns that you've had all throughout your life. And it's kind of like breaking everything down and sweeping it up and building this new foundation. And that takes a lot of work. And also, it's probably not something that someone should have to do on their own, like working with a professional that knows what they're talking about as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So hopefully everybody kind of digests that as they do and go on their own journey, and maybe after COVID start down a path to kind of, you know, find out how to rebuild a new foundation. I don't know. But it's very fascinating and overwhelming.
Yeah, but it doesn't just have to be overwhelming. I don't want to leave you with that feeling of, you know, it's so overwhelming. No, I shouldn't even just start. Because our bodies, I'll tell you, have an innate, just like we have an innate immune system, our bodies have an innate ability to heal. Our body wants to heal. And so we just have to give it the building blocks it needs. And we can talk a little bit too about how to support the immune system from a supplement perspective. So we talked a little bit about foods and the foods that we need to put into our bodies that are nourishing and not subjective to antagonizing the immune system. So right, we know all about this, right? Drinking enough water, getting enough fruits and vegetables on our plate. The majority should be vegetables. Then a little bit of protein and a little bit of carbs, having enough water in your day, right? So half your body weight in ounces, you should be sipping throughout the day. A coffee break really should be a water break. So putting those reminders in, and then realizing the importance of stress management, that cortisol actually can lower our immune system. So not to get overwhelmed and stressed by all of this, but realizing the importance of stress management to help our immune system and to actually heal it. So even if you have time for 2 minutes of meditation or even 2 minutes of mindfulness, it doesn't just have to be that. Some people really can't meditate. They can't just sit and be in quiet, and you should really work towards that. But if you can, just do something mindful. Maybe at dinner today, you're actually thinking about each piece of spinach or kale that you're putting into your body, or squash, and actually, you know, chewing a number of times, because all of that really is a mindful practice, and that helps with our body's digestion. It helps with what we're putting into our body, and that ultimately helps our immune system too. And then supporting ourselves with things like vitamin C and zinc and vitamin D and probiotics. All of these are very supportive to the immune system, all for various reasons, but essentially they're helping to support that adaptive immunity, our T cells and B cells. They're supporting the immune response. And the benefit of probiotics too is supporting our gut health, because 70% of our immune tissue is found in our gut. So that's where the benefit of, you know, that's a crossover between the immune system and your gut, is that there's actually, that's probably one of the first lines of defense, is the microbiome. That's part of our innate immune response. So we wanna make sure we've got healthy, beneficial flora. And so whether it's fermented foods or actual a probiotic supplement, there's lots that we can do to help ourselves. It doesn't have to be overwhelming.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate that. I think I needed that, like, that wake up call, or like, you know, that like reassurance. But you're right, like, obviously stress is a huge indicator in a lot of things, and our body gives us messages. Like, I'll have days where, like, I'll just get like a weird patch of like eczema that'll just pop up out of nowhere in like a random place, and I'm like, where did you come from? I didn't touch anything that was like bacteria-esque in that particular body area. Like, how could this have happened? And I literally have to like tune into my body and almost like in a way meditatively ask it like what's going on. And usually it has to do with inflammation. Yeah. And it's like something I'm eating, or it's like stress related or something like that. And when we just kind of tune into our body and we actually become one with it a little bit more, it does become really easy to like manage things better.
Absolutely.
So yoga, meditation, go walk out in nature, listen to freaking birds chirp. Another thing that's helped a lot of people is gratitude journals. So just like five things that you're grateful for. And it takes like what, three to five minutes?
I love that. And I'm not very good at actually getting pen to paper. So I need to work on that more, but I have a grateful app that I have on my phone, and it actually gives you, you can put in reminders and it prompts you with questions. So I'll sometimes do it at the end of my day to think about what I'm grateful for, what makes me laugh. And I'll tell you, it's not so much in the moment that it helps. It's looking back on things when it's a rough day and I'm looking at, oh yeah, having, you know, hugging my husband and laughing with my dog. That was like such a great day. And that really helps on days that are a little bit tougher. And we're all going through challenges. There will be ups and downs. This has been going on for several weeks now. And so being in social isolation doesn't mean that you have to be physically, you know, isolated and feeling emotionally isolated.
That's so beautiful. Cause like, I'm the opposite. I need pen to paper. I can't like, I can't use a mobile app to tell me to be grateful. Are you kidding me? It's a freaking mobile app, but you need it. So I think the message is like, there's something for everybody out there. We just have to go find it. Absolutely. And find what works for us. And that's so beautiful. So thank you for your tips today. Really appreciate it. And anything else that you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I'll just say one final thing, and that's about, so stress management and cortisol, which is our stress hormone. It's produced from our adrenal glands. I probably talk about this with pretty much 90% of my patients because it is so important. And right now we are going through a global, you know, it's a global pandemic, it's global trauma, global grief, and global stress. So we really need to focus on how we can adapt better to what's going on right now. We can't necessarily change it, but we can change our response. And realizing that cortisol initially for an acute response is needed, but over time, when we don't complete that stressful loop and get back into rest and digest, that's what can be damaging to the immune system, because it can down-regulate our actual number of white blood cells. So realize the importance of cortisol, realize the importance of stress and its impact on the immune system. So if you do nothing else, remember that the thoughts that we have in our head are very important. Connect with others, be grateful that, you know, you are in the situation that you're in. You can always find somebody worse off than you, really. Reach out to others, and that actually helps your own mental health, right? So if you're volunteering, if you're connecting with a senior in your community, and it can be over telemedicine or over the phone. I know my grandma doesn't do FaceTime, and so I'm reaching out to her over the phone or over an email. That will actually help your own mental health. So just think about that, and just stay safe, stay healthy. Stay motivated, and we will all get through this time collectively together. And you can see, this is Earth Day actually, but the globe, the Earth, Mother Earth is actually responding to what's going on right now. So take those moments of little pleasure, and find some be optimistic in these times. But thank you so much for having me. You can connect with me, you know, on Dr. Shibita Teja ND on Instagram, on Facebook. Tejawellness.ca is my website. And I am reaching out to patients. Like I said, I have a number of telemedicine consults a day, but there is space. So, you know, just connect with me and see if I can help you during this time. Thanks for having me, Em.
No, it's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. And yeah, we recorded this on Earth Day today, which is like so beautiful.
Yeah. It's fitting.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. The Sustainable Life app is a digital platform which includes a mobile app, website, podcast, and documentary series,
all centered around the five factors for sustainable consumption: impact on human health, environmental impact, respect for human rights, respect for animal rights, and last but not least, socioeconomic advantage, because we want brands and businesses who have sustainable practices to succeed. The purpose of the free Sustainable Life app, available on both Apple and Android, is to connect you with sustainable brands and businesses worldwide. Use the app to do direct-to-consumer online shopping or for the fun hashtag shop local function, through which you can find local retail shops, grocery stores, cafes, restaurants, salons, spas, event venues, eco hotels, eco tours, and even eco service providers like makeup artists, naturopaths, and dog groomers. This app was created to make sustainable living easy for you. Use it at home and while you travel to live a life in line with your core values. And of course, to hashtag shop local. The app is available on both Apple and Android devices. Have a story idea or suggestions for a future guest for our podcast? Visit www.sustainablelifeapp.com to submit an idea, or email us at podcast@sustainablelifeapp.com with your guest or show idea suggestions. Just a note that we are a non-judgmental community. It is our belief that no one is perfect, but if we all do our part to consume more sustainably, there will naturally be a positive ripple effect worldwide. Our hope is that the app helps to positively impact your health, the environment, and all living beings. On a legal note, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the guest and do not necessarily reflect that of Mangla Bansal, Tell Your Story Productions, Inc., and its subsidiaries, affiliates, and associated companies, together with all respective officers, directors, and employees thereof. Thank you for being such an important part of our community. The love enlighten me salutes the love enlighten you. See you next time.